Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time Podcast, Week 3 review and Week 4 preview. Today with you is Hakun Wong and Ryan Whitfield from Football Garbage Time, as always, telling you what we think are the major takeaways from Week 3 and taking a look at Week 4. So, Ryan, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Hakun?
Not too bad. So I know that we're going to get a little bit more of this during the show, but Jacoby Brissett, huh? Jeez, what the heck? You could put like a you could put a taco behind center, and you guys are going to win. Isn't that pretty much? Still throwing that game.
Yeah. Thursday night was just another amazing night. So
for some, I'm sure the Texan fans don't agree with you on that one.
Yeah, well, you know, Texan fans got to get used to it. Whether they're coming and wearing Letterman jackets or coming and keeping their mouths quiet, they're still they're just not ready for that stage. Haven't been, and I don't know if they ever will be.
Well, now that J.J. Watt is out, it's essentially for the season. I don't know if you saw that, but back, re-injured back. Looks like he's going to be toast for the rest of the season. Any thoughts on, you know, just kind of preview here, the Texans' chances of actually becoming relevant this year?
Well, you know, as I always like to point out, because everyone likes to point out anytime there's anything shady going on in, down in Foxborough, you know, a guy with a back injury like that coming back 4 weeks ahead of schedule, I'm sure it was just a lot of kale and protein shakes. So I'm really, really sorry for JJ. But yeah, they're a class two team, a tier two team in the NFL. Or the AFC. That's actually one of my takeaways today, so I'll kind of come back to that in a little bit. But there's still parity's dead in the NFL, so and they're living pretty.
All right. Well, I don't want to steal your thunder, so let's just go ahead and get right to it then.
Yeah. So I'll jump in on it on the first topic.
Yep. Terrific. You know, so tell me, what's your first takeaway? Go ahead.
First takeaway is just that there is no such thing as parity in the NFL. And there hasn't been for quite a few years now. Every year, you can kind of pick out who the elite teams are before the beginning of the season, and it pretty much stands pat. You know, there's usually between the 4 and 6 seed, you'll see some switching going on. Every once in a while, you'll see a surprise team win their division just to get into the playoffs and get pancaked by one of the elite teams. And you know, I mean, if you really look at it, the last 4 or 5 years, it's basically been in the AFC. The Broncos, the Patriots, and the Steelers, and then the Ravens intermittently here and there, and they kind of look like they're back in the mix again. So it's really just those four teams. You know, people get hyped on Cincinnati. They get hyped on the Texans. They get hyped on, you know, these other teams in the division and then or in the conference, and then they come into the postseason. And it's really been since the 2009, 2010 Jets since we've really seen anybody kind of challenge that hierarchy. The Colts kind of backdoored their way in there 2 years ago and got steamrolled in that AFC championship game in 14 up in New England. So NFC, it's kind of the same thing. It's, you know, the Seahawks and the Panthers are going to be in it, and you know the Packers are going to be in it, and everybody else is just kind of playing for, for second place or, you know, more likely fourth place. But
what about the Vikings, though? I mean, the Panthers and the Vikings, you know, they showed up. I mean, either the Panthers didn't show up or the Vikings really showed up. I mean, is this kind of like the awakening of the Panthers and NFC North? I mean, the Packers are probably back in the mix a little bit now because Jordy Nelson's turned it back on. I mean, those guys could be perennial challengers in NFC too, can't they?
They can be, but I guess my point is gone to the days of the 0-1 Patriots, where a team just comes out of nowhere. They're an underdog. No one believes in them. They go all the way. The 99 Tennessee Titans, you know, that era of the NFL is gone. It is. So, yeah, the Vikings are on the come, but they've been on the come for a couple years now. Same thing with Seattle. People think that they came out of nowhere, but they were 7-9 that year and squeaked into the playoffs and then beat a good Saints team at home. The next year they went on and they either won the division or challenged the division. And then it was the next, you know, 3 years they won the division. So, again, there's you still have the ability to build the team. And, you know, I think that's what the Vikings have done. The Vikings threw a lot of draft picks and a lot of patient team building. You know, they've kind of built something out there, but it didn't happen overnight. You know, they kind of snuck into the playoffs, I think 4 years ago, with Christian Ponder, and then they were out the next year and he was bad. And then they kind of came back the next year, last year with Teddy Bridgewater, and got into the playoffs, and they weren't a real serious team. You know, they had a good defense, but you knew even at home, and, you know, as good of a knockout fight as it was, you knew that that at home they were going to be that they were probably going to lose that game to Seattle because they weren't on that level yet. And, you know, now this year you can kind of take them a little bit more serious. I think they have too many injuries, but once they're, you know, kind of full tilt next year and loaded back up and Laquon Treadwell has another year under him, you know, I could see them challenging or vying for a Super Bowl. But, you know, it's a couple-year process. The worst to first has disappeared in the NFL.
Really? Well, how about what about the Philadelphia Eagles? I mean, they've kind of come out of nowhere this year. Everyone kind of thought they were absolute, you know, burnt toast. They were coming out of the gate dead, basically, and they managed to turn this season into a really interesting season. Now, I admit, beating the Browns and the Bears is not really a huge accomplishment, but this weekend when they took on the Pittsburgh Steelers, their defense looks legit. Now, everyone's talking about Carson Wentz, you know, and this is actually was one of my takeaways, but you know, let's take that offense and put it aside for now. That defense is actually a legitimate defense. I mean, it is actually number one at limiting points. It's limited to only 9 points per game. It also has limited. It has the fourth least yards allowed per game, 274.3, and among the lowest rushing and passing yards, obviously. And they actually have been very effective on defense, and they really didn't even change anything on that side of the ball in the offseason. So what do you think about the Philadelphia Eagles? Could they be one of those guys who are sneaking out of the woodwork, no one's seeing them coming, and they could challenge for something in the NFC?
I you know, I'm going to have to see it a little bit more than three games. For me, I think I buy into the Eagles a little bit more because I've always thought Chip Kelly was a moron.
Right.
And
I think
you're seeing that now. I mean, you probably – I think we talked about this last year, but you probably remember as good as I do. We're both Notre Dame fans. The year that Notre Dame went to the national championship, they actually left Oregon that year because Chip Kelly's team missed a field goal, because that whole year he would go for it on fourth down. So the one time he needed his field goal kicker to hit a field goal in a game, they brought him out there for like a 37-yard chip shot. He shanks it.
Right.
They lose. Notre Dame moves up into the number two slot. And because of that, Chip Kelly doesn't go to national title. And that's Chip Kelly. He has, you know, he's an offensive-minded speed at the detriment of the rest of the team. And so you think you saw that. So I think the defense, you know, water seeks its level. I think the defense is a little bit somewhere between where it was last year and this year. You know, they're not as good as they have been this year, and they're not as bad as they were last year. Truth usually lies in the middle. So I think you'll see them come back down to earth a little bit more. But again, that's a team that, you know, that was a coaching issue. I think that they've been putting pieces in place there. Nelson Aguilar was a pick last year. Jordan Matthews is now 3 or 4 years in the league. And, you know, you got Ryan Matthews a couple years ago and Sproles, who still has a little left in the tank. And then this year you go and get Carson Wentz on the defensive side of the ball. You've had Fletcher Cox. You've had Connor Barwin. You know, not only – a lot of these guys have always been there. And I think that what you saw last year was kind of what my takeaway was a couple weeks ago from the Patriots game about the offense going out there for holding the ball for 2 minutes and the Dolphins are going 7-minute drives. You know, when that's kind of happening against you and your offense is, even if they drive, you know, 80 yards or doing it in 3 minutes, it's hard to catch your breath and get out there and play shutdown defense after that.
Right. I mean, I have to say, though, so that's like I said, I've been impressed with the Eagles defense. And I understand these guys have been there, but it's amazing what they've been able to do. It's night and day between this year and last year. Already in three games, 10 sacks, 3 interceptions, 4 forced fumbles. You know, like I said, and as I said before, the fourth least amount of yards allowed per game, lowest points per game. This is something, you know, and I understand it's we're talking about the Browns and the Bears, but the Steelers are a legitimate team, and I think that is amazing what they've been able to do on defense. And now flipping to the other side, you look at Carson Wentz, and I've always been a Wentz guy, even before the draft. You know, I had some of my questions about Goff. I did like Wentz because he kind of reminded me a little bit about Ben Roethlisberger. He's a big guy. He's a big arm. There was just not a lot of track record there. So I didn't think he'd be good out of the box, but he has proven me wrong. 250 yards per game, 5 total touchdowns, 0 interceptions. and he's only taken 4 sacks in 3 games. This guy actually is performing at a much higher level than most of the veterans in the league so far. I mean, this is, I think, an amazing discovery here, because I had actually written off the Eagles before the season started. I thought they were going to go nowhere. So
yeah, I
let's
agree.
Go ahead and... Yeah, so, I mean, I guess we can talk about, and I don't even like the Eagles, so don't get me wrong. I am not a fan, but I've got to give them credit where credit is due. This is quite an amazing move. I will say that I don't know what's happening with Ryan Matthews. He has some big games, bad games. I think they really need to settle on a good first down back. Darren Sproles, as you mentioned, fine. He's great as a pass-catching guy, obviously can make things happen in space. They need to settle on a guy to be their first down guy. Wendell Smallwood might be the guy. I don't think it's going to be Kenyon Barner. If they want to commit to Ryan Matthews, they should commit to him. I don't really think they should pull punches here. But at the end of the day, that's going to be their major weakness, I think, until they commit to a guy up front, a real bruiser between the tackles guy, which Ryan Matthews isn't. They might have some problems moving the ball in short yardage situations. I think that may be a problem for them long term. But let's go ahead and keep moving along here. So tell me, what's your second takeaway from week three?
So my second topic kind of builds off of the first point into the second one. I'm sure you've seen all the reports this week. The NFL ratings are down through 3 weeks. And, you know, a lot of people asking why. I think one of it starts with the fact that there isn't a lot of parity. I think, you know, you can look a lot of matchups in week three already and look at two teams and say they have zero chance of making the playoffs. Why would I waste my time watching that game? But the other two major, I think, points in why the ratings are down in the NFL this year, you know, obviously I watch every game because I'm a nut for it, but...
right, me too.
I think probably one of the bigger reasons is bad coaching. It's kind of an epidemic in the league, and I think for the last couple of years we started to think that it was going to be bad quarterback play that would really hurt the future of the NFL,
mm-hmm.
But it's bad coaching. There's only a handful of good coaches in the league right now, and for whatever reason, there's a lot of coaches who just get way too many chances. You know, the one guy I pound on the most is, and I was just looking at the stats a second ago. Do you realize Jeff Fisher hasn't been out of a coaching job for 22 straight years? He was with the Houston Oilers into the Tennessee Titans, and then immediately into the Rams. And in that time, he has a .540 winning percentage, so just slightly above .500, and his playoff record is 5-6.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be okay if that didn't mean that he was only playing a playoff game or .5 playoff games a season. I mean, how do you have a job after 22 years when you can't ever get into the postseason? I know you as a Bears fan that you probably love him for back in the 80s, but you know he's awful and he's one of so many in this league. You know the Chuck Pagano's and you know, even Tomlin. You know, as much as I think he's a good motivator who gets his team up, and as an X's and O's guy, I don't think he's good. And when his team goes out there and gets punched in the mouth like they do early in the game against Philadelphia, and I'm not taking all the credit away from Philadelphia, but, you know, that's one of those games that they get down early, they go into the locker room, and because he's not an X's and O's guy, you know, he tries to give a rah-rah speech, and it only works sometimes. You know, it doesn't really help when you're getting your butt kicked like that. So they came back out, and they got even pounded again in the second half. So I think bad coaching can make the league, you know, very, very hard to watch sometimes, and – you know, luckily for me, I get to watch the Maestro every week. And, you know, this idea that I watch it on a weekly basis. Even through 3 weeks that the Patriots come out here and you saw it pay enormous dividends this week, but it's been paying off all 3 weeks, actually. This is the first week to get the turnovers off it, but doing the pooch kick, so forcing teams to run that ball out. And you see the Patriots doing it and teams having to start at the 15-yard line, and then those teams go score, whether it was Adam Gase and the Dolphins or Bruce Arians and the Cardinals, they go and score and they come out and they put the ball through the back of the end zone on the kickoff. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, how hard is this to figure out? The ball starts
right
at the 25 now. You might as well kick it to the 2 or 3 yard line and dare the team to run it out on you. And so I just watch it across the board. Again, from a Patriot perspective, I've watched every bad coach in the AFC East the last 15 years. And it's gotten to the point where there used to be, you know, a group of really great coaches, but then you saw people like Jim Harbaugh get run out of the league. And now you kind of are sitting there looking, and it's just, I mean, if I actually had to name the 5 best coaches in the league, I would have to go Belichick, Carroll, John Harbaugh. God, I guess roughly I'd give it to Arians. And I really think that's probably where I would stop. I'd probably list those 4 you know, and everybody else is, you know, good on one side of the ball, but they're not great managing the whole game. And I think it's really taken away from the overall product in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, I can agree with that to a certain, but how about Ron Rivera? Would you push him up there? I mean, he's been relatively solid.
No, I'm going to throw more shade on ex-Bears players.
Okay.
I cannot. You know, Rivera, I never fully bought into, and then I bought into him a little bit more last year until the Super Bowl. That's a front-running team. That's the typical cocky, arrogant, get up on you early, but, you know, if you punch them in the mouth, they're going to fall apart. And from his complaining about the schedule of having to go to Denver early this year, and then when they came back and they had another game, he said something else about the schedule. It's escaping me right now, but he said something else along the lines of, you know, the schedule makers did us no favors this year. And it's just, you know, when you start having that kind of attitude and mentality, I think that seeps into his team, and that's why his team isn't mentally tough, because I don't think he's very mentally tough. So, you know,
you don't think it's there's a hidden injury here for Cam Newton. I think that's actually kind of impact. I think there's something wrong with him. He doesn't look 100% to me. I mean, you know, you think that's actually a coaching issue over in Carolina right now?
I wouldn't put it all on coaching, but it would be on the list for me. Yeah, absolutely. I think Cam Newton has something going on. Obviously, Jonathan Stewart being down, you know, this early in the year is not helping. Letting Josh Norman walk, the secondary that really only had one good player last year now has, you know, kind of zero good players. So I think you see that seeping in a little bit. But I think that, you know, especially in the NFL, you really do mold your attitude to your coach. And when your coach is making excuses for the team in week one, you know, it's just they're one of those teams. You know, when they're up 38-0, they're all doing the pictures on the sideline and dancing. Everyone's having a good time. But the minute they're in a dogfight, Cam Newton's not diving for the ball as the Broncos pick it up. So, you know, I've never liked that kind of player. I've never liked that kind of team, and I've never liked that mentality. I like the guys that'll go out there. They don't care if it's, you know, 35-0 or they're losing 31-3. They're still going to hit you as hard on every single play and battle every single play. And I don't think that's ingrained in the Panthers' DNA, and I think that starts with Ron Rivera.
Okay, well, that's fair. I don't know if I'm not completely not sold on Ron Rivera. I think he's actually not as bad as that, but he is very defensive minded, and that's really what the Panthers built on is their defense plus Cam Newton is basically how they were running all these years, and until they found the right combination at running back and realized that Jonathan Stewart was actually much, much better if he got more touches. And there are definitely issues there, but I do have a little bit of bias, obviously. I mean, Rivera being a Bear, but I think from a coaching perspective alone, he's probably, in my opinion, in the top third, which, like as you say, is not hard to be in because there are really a lot of bad coaches in the NFL. I agree that the parity issue makes it hard to watch, but I also think that part of it is also that certain markets just aren't NFL markets, and that's hurting the NFL in some ways. You know, I think that when you have a situation like, for instance, in San Diego, where you have like a lot of really, really great fans, but then you have not a high quantity of them, you end up having an issue where people don't tune in to watch those games. They just don't care. And you look at that stadium, and only half the stadium is full. That's a problem. You know, I think that's a real problem. So I think there are a lot of other issues at play here. But I agree. I think there is a coaching issue. I think it's hard to find a good coach in the NFL because there's no way to know if you're a good coach in the NFL until they've done it. So as we've seen, Chip Kelly, for instance. And Pete Carroll, you know, he was bad his first in the NFL, went to a USC, and then came out to Seattle and ended up being a great coach. So, I mean, you never know. It's really hard to predict those things. And it's hard to grade those things after one stint in the NFL. So, anyway, let's move on. What's your third takeaway from week three?
Well, yeah, I didn't want to start with the Patriots three straight weeks, but you obviously know I'm not gonna take my miss my chance to take some shots here. All right.
This is going to be the warning for all you non-Patriot fans. It's Patriots time. We're going to take it away, Ryan.
Oh my God. You must all be so angry. It is, you know, it was jaw on the floor Thursday night, and I sent out some very honk Twitter or tweets after the game. I was actually out of town for a bachelor party, so I'd had a few, but it was
Yeah, okay. This seems to be always your situation while watching Patriots games, but all right.
on the night games, but, oh, my, yeah. Oh man, you know, it's just I want to break it down X's and O's, but I just want to take a moment to say, you know, everyone, you guys took your best shot. You know, everyone rallied around. You know, I'm going to go, you know, honk rant here. As I've said 1,000 times, you've heard my perspective on it. I've written about it enough on the site. We've talked about it enough. I get so angry at the Patriot honk fans who say, oh, NFL's out to get us. Roger Goodell is out to get us. Not true. The Patriots did it. You know, the deflator text messages, the signing of the sneakers, the guy who's not a ball boy, who was an equipment manager, not a ball boy, grabbing the football shirt and never even had him in his hands and stopping in the bathroom. The Patriots did it. They absolutely did. Whether it was sent down from Belichick or Brady, who knows? But they absolutely did it. The punishment was too severe. It was an over-punishment because of Spygate. It was an over-punishment from people like Jerry Jones, who was pissed off that in the past when they were unfairly punished in the uncapped year, when them and the Redskins went over the cap and then they were punished the following year, when owners like Bob Kraft came to him and said, be a team players for the betterment of the league, just take your punishment, stop fighting this. Like, all of that, the constant thumbing of their noses against the league, you know, the constant skirting of the rules and right on the edge, all of it built up, and the Patriots were overpunished. It was, you know, that you took $1 million, you took a draft pick away, and you took Brady away for 4 games. It was a complete overstep. It's been a spin control thing, or an overspin control on the NFL side from day one. The findings in the Wells report, for all of you who don't remember, was that he was more probable not that he was aware of it. Yet Goodell's gone on numerous interviews since, saying that Brady was absolutely aware of it, which he has zero evidence of. They fought it all the way to the court because of the weak NFLPA and their bad bargaining against them. And at the end of all of it, they didn't really prove anything. Even though, if you have if you have a rational thinking mind, you know they did it. But it was an overpunishment. It was an overstepping of fairness, fundamental fairness. I mean, basically Article 46, if that existed in you or my workplace, your boss could walk in and say, I don't like your shoes, you're suspended without pay for 2 months. That's basically what Article 46 in a nutshell says, is that basically your boss can do whatever he wants, no matter what, you know, and you've signed away on it. So, but at the end of the day, you know, you thought you had a weekend Patriot team. You guys all thought you'd beaten us. You thought you'd got us. You know, again, I'm not going to go through all the numerous things, the Colts pumping noise into the RCA Dome, the Falcons doing it down there, Aaron Rodgers saying he likes to overinflate his balls, the Stick'em incident in San Diego a couple years ago. Every team in the NFL cheats, but you only want to point at the Patriots because you're sick of watching us hold rings. So it's fine. And you guys got what you wanted. You got the 4-game suspension. And now, worst case scenario is the Patriots come out 3-1, still in on top of the AFC East. You're going to have a pissed off Brady, not just because Brady is pissed off that he was missed 4 games, but because now he knows that, you know, Jimmy G could be the real deal, and he's got him on his heels, and the Patriots proved they can win without him. So now he has something else to prove, another chip on his shoulder. So he's probably going to come out, and aside from save maybe the Denver game in Mile High, the Patriots probably run the table, be right back in the AFC Championship. And, you know, when Brady comes under snap, we have one, if not two, you know, Jacoby, not quite an NFL quarterback yet, but, you know, one or two guys in the future, because you proved you can win with them. You have the greatest coach of all time, and you have the greatest coach, okay. I mean, the greatest quarterback of all time under center. So at the end of the day, just like every other thing, the Patriots win.
Let's call the round on that one there. It's pretty clear that I think actually is one of the best things that could have happened to you guys, because honestly, you get a nice look at Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, I think I've been waiting to get a good look at him during the NFL season. He looks legit. So actually, I think it was very helpful. You know, save Brady for later. He's no injuries. He's going to be nice and fresh coming in quarter of the way through the season. Yeah, it's actually kind of worked out pretty nicely for you guys. But let me pivot for a second to another topic. Something that kind of popped up because no Thomas Rawls, Kristen Michael goes nuts in Seattle. They've added C.J. Spiller. Looks like Rawls is out for quite some time. You know, let's just go back and think about this for a second. Kristen Michael was actually drafted back in 2013 in the second round by the Seattle Seahawks. He did nothing. Got cut. Got traded to Dallas. And then he got cut for the same guy he lost out in Seattle, Robert Turbin. When Dallas picked up Robert Turbin, they waived Kristen Michael. He ended up on a practice squad in Washington. Now he's back in Seattle. At the end of last year, did great subbing in for Marshawn Lynch and Thomas Rawls. And now he's back again with Thomas Rawls injured, and he's doing great. I mean, what do you think of this guy? You think he's the real deal? Do you think he actually can be the number one running back in Seattle?
Yeah, I like his skill set. You know, I'm not sure why he's bounced around so much. Obviously, that puts up a red flag, but he looked great last week. And if you can have any good weeks with that porous offensive line in front of you, obviously run blocking and pass blocking are two different animals, but they can do that and get a running game back again so that Russell Wilson can stop losing limb after limb. It's only going to benefit them the rest of the year.
Yeah, speaking of Russell Wilson, he now has a high ankle sprain and a strained MCL, and he still says he's going to play. What do you think? Good idea, bad idea?
I think it's a bad idea. I think they're still, you know, their division is off to a rough enough start that they can afford for him to at least miss 1 week here, even cough up a game, and still be vying for the NFC West at the end of the year.
I think he's afraid of Tavon Boykin taking his job. I mean, the guy looked like he looked completely able to command that offense, and he actually looked more mobile or as mobile as Russell Wilson when he's healthy, and he's a lot cheaper. If Russell didn't sign that big contract recently, I would say that he's afraid he's going to lose his job at some point because they might trade him away for a couple of draft picks. But regardless of the fact, Seattle looks like they're back on track after that horrendous showing against the L.A. Rams the week before. Now let's take a look at Week 4 real quick. Tell me, what are you looking for in Week 4?
Yeah, just my kind of common theme this week. You know, I'm just looking for better football across the board.
Like
you see, you know, get through 1 week here without marquee injuries, which is my last thing that I really think is affecting the ratings, you know. The Chargers are unwatchable very early on with Keenan Allen going down and Danny Woodhead, and it seems like every year just massive injuries. So I'd like to see a nice clean week and, you know, get maybe 10 good solid games this weekend of good football, good coaching, and just, you know, some good exciting games. Week one was great, but the last 2 weeks have been really bad.
Yeah, you know, what I'm looking forward to is the Steelers and what if they're going to be able to bounce back from a really bad loss. But also to Le'Veon Bell returning, because I wonder if, you know, quite frankly, I thought D'Angelo Williams was going to continue to carry them after that first week, but then he kind of puttered out over the last 2 weeks. And last week, everyone looked terrible. I mean, everybody across the board. So I'm interested to see how Le'Veon Bell is going to impact them. I'm interested to see whether they're going to be able to bounce back from a bad week. And I'm interested to see what kind of adjustments they're going to make, because clearly they had some problems on defense, some real gaping holes in defense. I mean, they basically put zero pressure on Carson Wentz, a rookie quarterback, and was unable to slow him down in any way, and that will be a real issue. I can tell you the other thing I'm looking forward to is actually seeing if Cody Kessler is the answer in Cleveland, because, quite frankly, Tyrell Pryor looks like a beast with Cody Kessler behind center. I mean, he's, like, all over the place, and he's even throwing the ball. He's behind center and running down the field. The guy can do everything. So there's a lot of things I'm looking forward to, but I agree with you. I would like to see some more competitive games. I'd like to see more fun. I watch them all anyway, just like you, but that would be nice as well. Any parting remarks for our listeners before we conclude this episode?
Yeah, lastly, I mean, just to follow up on your Pittsburgh thing, I think it'll be interesting to see with kind of the emergence of Sammy Coates as a deep weapon if after a horrible game by Wheaton last week, if there's any trust there left between him and Big Ben. You know, Eli Rogers has had a nice start to the season. Sammy Coates as well, so it'd be interesting to see if there's any trust left there for Wheaton or if this is going to kind of be the beginning of his end in time in Pittsburgh.
Right, and I think Eli Rogers had a walking boot on after the game, so I'm not sure what his status will be going forward, but Sammy Coates could be really interesting. So we are at the end of our episode, so go ahead, Ryan, give us your Twitter so that everyone can follow you.
Yes, it is at Ryan Whitfield NE, and at about 4 o'clock on Sunday, we'll be having a bye-bye Rex party.
Right. And you can follow me at FB Garbage Time. Get all their NFL updates and follow along with us. Until next time, enjoy the rest of your NFL week.